the best in internet talk radio.
A mind-bendingly ingenious plan to control the universe.
We're building the best internet talk radio on the planet. TalkZone.com.
Hi, Hub Arkish, along with Jimmy Clemens of the LA Lakers, bringing you this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News, where every week we bring you all the news, scoops, and rumors before they happen, from the NBA, college hoops, and the NFL as well. This week, we go deep in Boston with Jimmy Golan of the AP. We talk about NBA free agency, and we'll see if we can figure out where Vincent Jackson, Chargers wide receiver, ends up next. It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.
Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News!
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News. I am Hub Arkish, the publisher and editor, and our co-host every week during the basketball season and what has become the extended basketball hot stove season, Jimmy Clemens, assistant coach of the LA Lakers. Our senior editors, Eric Edholm and Mike Wilkening, will join us a little bit down the road as we switch to football, but right now we're going to focus on the NBA and free agency. And so, of course, to do that, we wouldn't even try without our favorite NBA insider, Steve Kyler, the publisher at HoopsWorld.com. If you really want to understand what's going on in all this free agency stuff, guys, 24/7, you can get to HoopsWorld.com. And, Steve, we are in the middle of it now. A couple of early signings, nothing terribly shocking. I know Joe Johnson had made a lot of noise during the season about wanting to end up in Chicago, but it looks like he's going to get a max deal from the Atlanta ball club. You've got John Solomon's deciding to stay in Milwaukee. We've got Drew Gooden signing a nice deal with Milwaukee. So early dominoes falling, not huge, but interesting for those two ball clubs.
Absolutely. I think the decision by the Atlanta Hawks to actually open up the pocketbook and go max for Joe Johnson just shows how important, at least, to that ball club Joe is. I think it's a lot of money for him. I think there's a lot of people would argue that he's not a max-level player in the NBA, but, you know, a lot of times it's, is he a max-level player to us? And if you think about losing Joe Johnson to free agency and getting very little back, Atlanta goes from being a team that was, you know, steadily adding 2-3 wins every year to probably dropping back to middle of the pack in the Eastern Conference, probably drops below the 40-win mark without Joe. So I think it was really ownership saying, look, we've got to keep this crew together. This crew is going in the right direction. I think the real question is what else can they add now that they've really put all of that money into Joe Johnson? I think, you know, seeing what else is going to be interesting here in the next couple of weeks.
Jimmy, a couple more early moves, and then we'll talk about some coaching moves. But you've got Rudy Gay getting not a max contract, but a pretty nice deal, rumored to be about $86 million over 5 years to stay in Memphis. And Darko Milicic gets $20 million to stay in Minnesota. I don't think a lot of us saw that one coming.
I certainly didn't, and that's not to say I don't like Darko. I think that years ago when he was drafted number two in Detroit, people wondered, and then he's had homes briefly in New York and now in Minnesota, but he actually plays very well against us. So I think that if he can manage some consistency in his play, he could be a very serviceable player.
Well, and Jimmy, I'll tell you the other thing we didn't see coming, and of course, Phil Jackson's decision is Phil Jackson's decision and where that leaves the Lakers, but Byron Scott, after apparently trying to wait as long as he could, suddenly, late on Wednesday, of this past week, decides he's going to go to Cleveland prior to Phil making his decision. And so, very interesting there. You have to wonder, even though we're not going to know about LeBron for a few more days, if Byron Scott didn't feel he could be part of keeping LeBron James in Cleveland.
I'm not privy, and I don't want to guess, but my feeling is, from the outside looking in, is that a bird in the hand is probably better than one in the bush. And so he's going to probably try and build. And I actually think that with or without, obviously with LeBron, you have an outstanding team. But even if they happen to lose him to a sign and trade, they're going to get probably two nice players back and maybe even a pick for it. So I think that either way, they're going to be a very competitive basketball team. So I think he looked at it and did some evaluation and having a job. And like I say, the team in Cleveland, I think is going to be competitive regardless of LeBron's goings or comings. And so I think he decided to make a move.
You know, Steve, Scott actually 3 games under 500 over his entire NBA head coaching career, 352 and 355. But NBA Coach of the Year in the 07-08 season after leading the Hornets to a 59-26 mark. highly respected. And I'm guessing here that he began to realize, A, Cleveland can be a pretty good job, and B, regardless of what Phil decided in Los Angeles, nobody had guaranteed him that it was going to be his job. And so, as Jimmy said, he had to go for the bird in the hand.
Absolutely, Hub. You know, this is a situation where, you know, with or without LeBron James, the Cleveland Cavaliers are a good basketball job. I think there's no question of that. You've got a very veteran team that's been winning 60-plus games for the last couple of years. You've got an owner in Dan Gilbert that's willing to spend to win. He's not afraid to go out and spend money. He's proven that. And I still think that there's a very good chance that LeBron James is going to end up back with Cleveland. You know, there's going to be a lot of circus around him for the next few days, but we're supposed to maybe hear an answer from him probably Monday, Tuesday. And at the end of the day, there's no guarantee that he was going to get that Lakers job. I think Brian Shaw is probably the front runner for that if Phil decides to step down. But I think Coach will probably tell you everything we're hearing from the Lakers is that Phil probably is going to come back. And I think when you know that, when you're on the inside of that, like you said, a bird in the hand is always better. And I think having a playoff team, you know, like Cleveland, with or without LeBron, I think is a good job. And I think it'll give him a chance to prove that he really is a coach of the year.
You know, Steve, what I did not see coming, everything that I heard and read, everything I heard from Doc Rivers, everybody I talked to as far as pretty good sources, I think was under the impression that Doc was going to call it a day. And yet he's coming back for at least one more run. And now they're hopeful in Boston that they can keep the three amigos together.
Well, you know, he had told everybody in Orlando he was coming back. He told his golf buddies, you know, we'll get our regular game going again. So, you know, I think it was kind of all but decided that he was going to come back when he had left, you know, after losing the NBA Finals. But I think once you get away from it for a while, he said he sat down and talked with his family, and with his family's blessing, you know, decided that these guys, he couldn't just leave these guys. And you know, there's probably one more run left in the big three, big four, however you want to call them. And I think the appeal of that was probably, you know, bigger than I think anybody gave credit to. Now, there's been a lot of discussion already that, you know, part of this agreement might be that, you know, he's going to bring in an assistant coach, could be Lawrence Frank, former Nets coach, that's going to be his lead assistant replacing Tom Thibodeau, and then he might be able to take some games off if he needs to go and see some tournament play with his family. I think that would be kind of surprising, but, you know, word is the Celtics really kind of went out of their way to say, we'll make this work if you'll come back. I think they were as in love with him as he is with them.
All right, guys, it only works if Paul Pierce and Ray Allen, both free agents, come back. We'll talk in just a minute about how the Celtics get that done. Jim Clemens and Hub Arkish talking NBA hoops, NBA free agency, NBA coaching moves right here on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News. We are joined by Steve Kyler of HoopsWorld.com. When you're not listening to us, you should be at HoopsWorld.com on your computer for the very best in NBA inside information. And, you know, guys, we explain it most weeks. We tape late each week in order to air on the 135 or so markets that we're in somewhere between Friday evening and Sunday morning. This is a very fluid situation. But as far as the big guys, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, Dirk Nowitzki, we're pretty sure, maybe even a Carmelo Anthony trade, you know, we're pretty sure that these guys are going to have to take at least a little bit of time. No free agent contracts can actually be signed until July 8th. Steve, where's the wind blowing with LeBron? We know what the lineup is now in terms of the order he's going to visit with teams, but anything you're hearing or anything you're aware of that may have moved the needle in one direction or the other?
Well, he has had quite the circus here this weekend, and he's done the formal interview process where he's doing two-a-day meetings with teams. The first team he met with was the New Jersey Nets, and they've got a very compelling pitch. They've got a great young roster. They've got a great coach in Avery Johnson. They've got an owner that could probably buy most of the league if he were so inclined. There's a very good thing going on there with New Jersey, and I think the one thing that they've really tried to position themselves as is that, look, we're going to be the dominant team in the New York metro area, and we're going to do that very quickly. And, you know, they've struck first with huge billboard campaigns all over the city. You know, they mapped out a plan where he was going to be the focal point of everything they do in marketing the team in Newark and then ultimately in Brooklyn when they move there in 2 years. And they're really selling this global icon concept. And that's something LeBron has said in interviews that really appeals to him. And I think New Jersey has really kind of positioned themselves well. They have his very good friend Jay-Z, who's a part owner there, who's really talking about all of the interesting multimedia collaboration things they can do. And they're really appealing to the fact that, LeBron, you're big now. We can make you as big as anybody in sports if you come here. And I think that plays to a thing that's important to LeBron. I think the Knicks are a team that came in and said what they wanted to say, but I don't think that they made an impression. Chicago Bulls are at the table. They've made a compelling pitch that you'll win championships here, and we'll put a statue of you on the other side of the building, and it'll be yours in Michael's town forever. I don't necessarily know that all of those things really have moved him quite as much as maybe New Jersey's pitch, but, you know, I think the Cavs said it best. They put a banner right outside the building when you walked in that said, home is more than a player.
You know, Jim, on the New Jersey pitch, I hear everything Steve's saying, but what we're pretty sure of is that the Nets don't have a GM right now. We believe Rod Thorne is resigning, or retiring, I should say, this July or this month. A lot of reports have Hornets GM Jeff Bauer, maybe Bobby Marks, who's a VP with the Nets right now, maybe Thunder GM Sam Presti. LeBron's not a dumb guy. I mean, I got to believe that that's a minor concern of his, that he doesn't know who's going to be running the basketball show if he goes there.
I'm listening to Steve also, and right, they have a young roster, but do they have a roster that can win a championship? And if all of this three-ring circus that we're sitting back wondering about isn't, at the end of the day, it's about trying to get a ring. And I just don't see New Jersey with its roster as it is. And granted, they obviously have some moves that they want to make behind the scenes, and we aren't privy to all that. But the thing is, you know, can you ultimately win a championship there? And I think that would be the focal point. Otherwise, you might as well stay in Cleveland. And so it's going to be really interesting to me how this thing really shakes out. And once again, who's going to be at the helm driving this? Because obviously, whoever now comes in and takes assume Rod Thorne's position, and Avery and the owner, they've got to be in concert with each other. And sometimes that's very difficult to do. Getting the X's and O's to play together on one hand, and then getting the right X's and O's to give you that team chemistry that ultimately will lead to a championship.
So, Steve, listening to you and Jimmy, you know, nobody mentions Miami, who wants to see themselves as a player. They can offer close to two max contracts. They have no state income tax, but my problem with it is I don't see any guarantee they're going to win anything, even if they can bring a LeBron and a Bosch or a LeBron and a Boozer there. And I get a sense. Tell me if 2 and 2 is equaling 4, or maybe I'm just getting 5 here. But I know Dwayne Wade has made it clear he wants to stay in Miami. We know he was at home in Chicago Saturday of this weekend. I get a sense that maybe the reality that Miami is not going to be the winner in the LeBron thing could start to move the needle on Wade a little bit to maybe listen to the Bulls and maybe even other teams.
Well, Hub, you hit it right on the head, because, you know, free agency opened Thursday, and the first place Dwayne was at United Center talking with Jerry Reinsdorf and Tom Thibodeau. You know, they did not waste any time at all, and he toured United Center and heard a very compelling pitch. And I think that Dwayne, like all free agents in this position, want to listen to what's out there. Ultimately, he wants to be in Miami, but he's not going to close any doors till he understands where a championship is. And, you know, the thing about players, and especially young players, and coaches going through this with Kobe, there's a moment when you realize all that is important is winning, that all of the other things that you can get in sports really don't matter unless you're a champion. And I think Dwayne is kind of there. You know, he's kind of moved past a lot of the endorsement stuff. It is about winning championships, where with LeBron, I think we're not there yet, and certainly with Dwight Howard in Orlando, we're not there yet. But I think with Dwayne, he has started to realize that all other things don't matter until you can win championships and compete for them every year. And I think that's what's going to be most compelling to him. You know, Miami has put together a very aggressive plan. They're going to get two marquee players, whether it's a Chris Bosh or an Amari Stoudemire. They're going to get some players around Dwayne. And I think ultimately somebody's going to have to convince Dwayne that they're not going to do that in order for him to leave Miami. But, you know, Dwayne, the smart businessman, he's going to listen to all offers.
All right, guys, by this time next week, we should know where a bunch of these guys are going. Steve, thank you much. We'll check in with you down the road. Jimmy, you stay put. We've got a great interview coming up next out of Boston. Bob Arkush and Jim Clemens rolling on with more NBA inside info on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News, and we promised the straight scoop from Boston, so we head there and welcome in Jimmy Golan. Jimmy is a Boston writer for the Associated Press and particularly close to the Celtics. And, you know, Jimmy, everything that we were hearing up until, I believe it was Tuesday of this past week, was that Doc was going to say enough, that he wanted to go watch his kids play, and then we hear he's coming back for one more run. What is your understanding of what caused him to decide that he wanted to stay on the Celtics bench?
Well, I think he was genuinely torn. You hear a lot of people say they want to spend more time with their family, and I think he really wanted to spend more time with his family. But I think they might come up with some kind of arrangement where he might get to take some time off. Maybe if there's a couple days off between games, he might head home to Orlando or maybe take in one of his kids' games. I don't think he'll be missing games or anything like that. But he had kind of alluded to that on draft night, that there might be some sort of compromise. The other thing is that, you know, he thought he wants to be with his family, and he thought they'd want him there, but they all told him to go coach. They said, you're a coach, that's what you should be doing, and I don't think they don't want him around, but I think they just wanted him to do what he wanted to do.
Okay, Jim, Kendrick Perkins, what's the story with his health and issues and the rest of the roster? I know Boston went older with veterans, and now some of those veteran players may not be returning. Can you give us any insight on that?
Perkins, you know, he has some torn ligaments in his knee. There's some doubt as to whether it's three of them or two of them, but, you know, it's an injury that can take up to a year to come back from. You know, they're saying now maybe 6 months. So, I mean, you talked about the older players, but they have some problems with their younger players, too. You know, Garnett is a year removed from knee surgery. The question is whether that will mean he's getting better or whether or not he's just, you know, kind of put too many miles on those knees for him to really, you know, pop back into form. Pierce, I ultimately believe, will come back. You know, there's a lot of advantage for him to opt out of the contract and re-sign with the Celtics. Allen, I think he wants to come back too, but they're not going to offer him, you know, kind of the most he can get. And it depends on how, you know, who jumps in and maybe offers him a really big deal for a couple of years. I think the Celtics would like to have him back for one, maybe 2 years at the most.
Well, Jimmy, let's go back a step. Jimmy Clemens mentioned them going older really 2 years ago, and I guess the focus there is Rasheed Wallace. Now, Rasheed probably played his best basketball as a Celtics in the semifinal or in the conference finals and then the finals of the playoffs this year. It was assumed that his retirement was all but done after Game 7. You have to wonder, though, now, as he's had a little chance to take some time off, as this thing starts to reshape itself, Doc coming back, should we continue to assume that Rasheed Wallace won't be part of this picture next year?
I think that Rasheed, on opening night, Rasheed Wallace will be retired. Whether or not, you know, as the season goes on, not that he changes his mind, but maybe that, you know, it's a different decision to come back for, you know, 3 or 4 months, like guys sometimes do. Or, you know, to spend the whole year in training camp, things like that. So it's possible when February comes around and they need a big man and, you know, now he's looking at a short-term commitment that, you know, he comes out of retirement. But I really think that he genuinely feels like he's done.
How do you feel about other veterans like Michael Finley, Marquise Daniels, who also were acquired this year to give you that veteran leadership playoff time and do you think they'll be with the team next year on the roster spots, or are they going to have to make good someplace else?
You know, the Celtics have kind of used those positions as interchangeable spots. They love Finley, but I don't think he did much for them. You know, when you get into the playoffs, you start shortening your rotation. There just wasn't one of their top 7 or 8 guys. So I'm sure they'd take him back if the numbers are right, but I don't think that he's a big part of their plan. Daniels, even less so.
So, Jimmy, as you look at this ball club, it's really interesting, the makeup. Let's assume that Rasheed Wallace is retired. Let's assume that somebody does want to, quote, overpay for Ray Allen. We've heard one rumor that the Celtics have already reached out to J.J. Redick to fill that spot. But when you look at the nucleus of the ball club, even if Paul Pierce comes back, even if Kevin Garnett is healthy, it's still a team that's kind of in limbo, a little bit older in some spots. Yeah, hopefully the future is bright for Rajon Rondo, maybe Perkins, maybe Big Baby Davis. But you almost get the sense that this is the last year of Doc's contract and that this truly is one last hurrah if they can pull it off before this team needs to be rebuilt.
Correct. And you raise a good point. I mean, they need to rebuild. They have Glenn Davis under contract, and I'm not sure if there's anybody else who's signed. So they do need to, you know, start with the rebuilding now. You know, J.J. Redick would be a good piece of someone who wouldn't just be a one-year fix. But, you know, I don't think anyone has any kind of illusion that other than Pierce, any of those big three guys are going to be contributing years down the road. And if they can make a run at it this year, then I think that's it. Like you said, the window's closing.
All right, Jimmy Golan of the AP in Boston. Jimmy, thank you so much for taking time out to join us this week. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to let Jim Clemens move on as we get ready for the gridiron. We're back with more NFL Way We Hear It in just a moment. We'll talk to you next week, too, Jim. And it is NFL Way We Hear It time here on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News. Mike Wilkening, senior editor, joins me. And we welcome in on the line from the Pro Football Weekly offices our associate editor, Michael Blunda. One of the teams Michael covers is the San Diego Chargers. And Michael, Vincent Jackson, a highly sought-after wide receiver, big-play wide receiver of the Chargers, a restricted free agent, unhappy with the tender offer in San Diego. Chargers don't seem likely to offer him a long-term deal right now. Has been rumored to be trade bait. Tell us what you can about that situation.
Yeah, just a matter of weeks, maybe after A.J. Smith, a general manager in San Diego, said he would not be looking to trade Vincent Jackson. Now, you know, what we're hearing is that he's changed his stance there, and he is willing to listen to offers for Jackson. Supposedly, the team's interested so far. Seattle has made them an offer. It wasn't good enough, and they, you know, San Diego decided to pass. And the Redskins are also to be rumored, to be an interested team in Jackson's services. So, seems like a trade could happen with Jackson. It just depends on if A.J. Smith gets an offer that he likes.
If they indeed are open to trading Vincent Jackson, what would be the line of succession there? Would Legdu Nane be the guy that they would look at? And what about Buster Davis, the guy that they spent the first-round pick on 4 years ago?
Yeah, what would probably happen is Malcolm Floyd would all of a sudden become their number one receiver. And Legdu Nane, who was a pretty solid player in the slot for them, would slide up into that number two spot. And then, the number three would be a question. Buster Davis is the guy they have high hopes for. You know, he was a first-round pick a few years back, has really been a bust so far. But he's looked pretty good this offseason and could be the guy in that slot. They also picked up Josh Reed, the veteran from the Bills, in this offseason, and he could also challenge to be the number three receiver. So, the receiving core would take quite a hit if they lose Vincent Jackson, and that's probably what it would look like.
Well, Michael, thank you very much for your work on that story. We will keep an eye on a fluid situation in San Diego with Vincent Jackson, although the reality is we've really reached the rare downtime in the NFL. Most teams shut down operations at the end of June for about 2 or 3 weeks as they get ready for training camp, but there are off-the-field stories, and one of those is in Jacksonville. We welcome in associate editor Arthur Arkish, and one of Arthur's teams is the Jaguars. And Arthur, the Jags have a problem selling tickets. They have an image problem in Jacksonville. A lot of fans not sure that they're committed to staying. Wayne Weaver says he is. And yet every time he does something to try and either sell tickets or improve their image, it seems like they shoot themselves in the foot.
Well, that's certainly the case. Most recently, they made the decision that they were going to make their Intra-Squad scrimmage that takes place the first week in August only available to season ticket holders. They'd be the only ones that can attend. Now, that was obviously, kind of a last-ditch effort to boost ticket sales, but it's kind of backfired. Jaguars fans are not happy with the decision, and it's kind of creating some controversy in Jacksonville.
Arthur, it's interesting because Weaver, every chance he gets, reaffirms his commitment to Jacksonville. People talk about the Jaguars as a likely tenant for a new stadium out in L.A., and Weaver says, no, I'm staying. And yet you almost get a sense that the missing piece here is that the Jags have got to win. They've got to be competitive to generate some excitement. There was a little bit of that 2 seasons ago when they made the wild card run last year, a disappointment. And you wonder, have they done enough on the field this year to be a more competitive, better football team?
Well, that's a very valid question. They're playing in a tough division and have a tough schedule. As we know, they've revamped the defense, and they're going to be young. This is still a rebuilding project, but they do believe they can be competitive this year. Coach Del Rio has said the goal is to win the AFC South this year, so we're just going to have to wait and see. But there's a lot of work to be done. They've only got 1 month left for ticket sales, and 11,000 General Bowl tickets still need to be sold to avoid the blackouts this season.
All right. Reasonable goal for Coach Del Rio, but a huge mountain to climb. We take a quick commercial break here. We've got a lot more NFL Way We Hear It coming up right here on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News. More NFL way we hear it right here on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News. And the parade of Arkishes continues as our executive editor, Dan Arkish, checks in. And, Dan, you got big shoes to fill. Arthur just joined us at the end of the last segment. And I want to talk to you about the Indianapolis Colts. We see now, I don't know, I didn't understand the release of Ryan Lilja. I'm still not sure I understand it. But apparently it signals a new life for Tony Hugo and Mike Pollock, two high draft choices who had fallen in disfavor with the legendary Howard Mudd, but now that Mudd is done and Pete Metzelaars has taken control, what is the status of this offensive line?
Hubbard's in a state of flux. You're exactly right in regards to Tony Hugo and Mike Pollock, a couple of guys that were high draft picks, and they've earned a new lease on life. You know, they were former starters, but in the Howard Mudd regime, if you didn't perform, your name, no pun intended, instantly became Mudd. So now they've got a new life, and they are competing for both guard spots, which on a team that has very few question marks, that guard position is wide open.
Dan, any other particular changes that Metzelaars is planning? Certainly we know the style that Howard Mudd brought to the table there, and we're familiar with the play of that offensive line. Anything else in particular different that we can kind of watch with this line this year?
Well, Wilkie, you know, really only two spots on the line are etched in stone. You know, the veteran Jeff Saturday, he's a good one. He's safe. So is Ryan Diem at right tackle. Now, Charlie Johnson at left tackle, he could get some competition from Adam Terry, who a big boy who they brought in from the Ravens. He's had health issues, but he's huge. And, you know, the need for more size is something that Bill Polian has talked a lot about. So, you know, there could be some changes there. Beyond that, I think you're going to see some help in two tight end situations. A guy to watch is this Eldridge kid that they drafted who, you know, looks like he could be a real good blocker. And what they really want to do is improve, you know, the run blocking in short yardage situations, which Polian said was a big problem.
Hey, Dan, real quickly before I let you go, I forgot to mention another team of yours I wanted to just check in on, the St. Louis Rams. Steven Jackson, an interesting case. He's at that point with these franchise running backs where hopefully another huge year or two. He got banged up a little bit last year. You just don't know with these overused backs what you can get out of them. And the backup situation in St. Louis is not exactly crystal clear, is it?
It hasn't been real good for a while now, Hub. I mean, the veterans, such as they are, that are on the roster are Kenneth Darby, who's been ordinary at best, and Chris Ogbonnaya, a rookie last year who showed some flashes. But, you know, a lot of people close to the team were really surprised that they didn't draft a running back. The guy that, you know, they're looking at who could emerge is a rookie free agent named Keith Tostin out of Oklahoma State, who has a style very similar to Jackson's, but you know maybe they'll pick up a veteran. They're really playing with fire with Jackson because he's coming off back surgery and they've worked him to death the last couple of years.
All right, Dan, thank you very much. We now welcome in Associate Editor Dan Parr. And Dan covers, in addition to other clubs, the NFC South, the New Orleans Saints. Darren Sharper will be back, and you hate to use a baseball analogy, but apparently on a pretty tight pitch count, at least during the preseason and early in the year.
Yeah, that's the analogy Sean Payton used. I was speaking to him earlier this week and asked about Sharper, a guy who's coming off what has been described as a microfracture surgery on his knee. Anytime that word gets thrown around, it's a concern, especially when you're Darren Sharper and your body might be breaking down at his age. So he's going to be monitored pretty closely. They're grooming Malcolm Jenkins, their first-round pick in 2009, to eventually become the free safety. They think they can get one more year out of Sharper, but I think we won't see a whole lot of him in training camp. The Saints are going to be very careful about getting him back and to full strength.
Dan, curious situation with the Carolina Panthers. We know that John Fox is in the final year of his contract. The owner, Jerry Richardson, is close with Fox, has said no need to worry about being a lame duck coach, but, you know, nonetheless, you don't want to be in that situation. Certainly the threat of a lockout in 11 looms, and Richardson doesn't want to be committed to money he doesn't have to pay. But now we realize that Marty Herney, the general manager, longtime GM, his contract apparently expired earlier this week, and as far as we know, there is no new deal in place. What are you hearing we should expect there in the front office?
Well, this has been a topic for a while now, Marty Herney's future. Apparently he's had a contract offer on the table going back to last season. And we haven't heard whether he signed that or not. It could be that he has a new deal in place. The Panthers don't come out and announce things like that. They keep their front office contract situations private, and there hasn't been any leak out of there quite yet. Now, it also could be that Marty Herney has put off signing a new contract out of respect for John Fox. These two work very closely together, believed to be very good friends, and still very good friends. With Fox not getting a new deal, Herney's tried to be very careful about not making a big deal about him actually getting a contract offer. He doesn't want some kind of rift to emerge between those two. He wants to be very careful about how he handles this situation.
All right, Dan, thank you very much. We take one more quick commercial break, and then it's all Wilkie all the time as three of his clubs, the Bengals, Steelers, Titans, very busy weeks. We're going to talk about it in just a moment. We are talking National Football League inside scoops and information, all the new scoops and rumors before they happen with the way we hear it right here on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News. Mike Wilkening is our co-host at various times of the season and also covers a number of NFL clubs for Pro Football Weekly, including the AFC North, the Cincinnati Bengals. Not the news they wanted to hear, Mike. It's been a relatively quiet year or so for players in trouble off the field since the tragic death of Chris Henry. And now their resurgent running back, Cedric Benson, is arrested on a misdemeanor assault charge in Austin, Texas. It actually apparently happened about a month ago. These are not charges to be taken lightly, and Benson has gotten himself in some semi-serious trouble again, even though it is a misdemeanor charge.
Right, but it's a situation where at the very least it's a distraction for Cedric Benson and the Bengals. And again, it was a misdemeanor assault charge stemming from a May 30 incident at an Austin, Texas bar. Austin police alleged that Benson struck a bartender outside the bar, Annie's West. Benson has retained attorney David Cornwell. Cornwell has kind of shared Benson's account of the evening, per Benson's account, according to Cornwell, kind of everything started with Benson was, quote, asked to take pictures with some female fans, unquote, as Cornwell put it. And basically kind of happened after that, a man approached Benson, according to Cornwell, sort of took offense to that, punched Benson, according to Cornwell, and after that, sort of was an altercation as Benson was walking out. Cornwell said he was approached by another man aggressively, as Cornwell put it, and there was an incident where Benson, quote, attempted to protect himself, unquote, and then left the club. Now Cornwell said that Benson has cooperated with the league, the Bengals, and law enforcement will continue. But certainly it's a situation where, obviously, as we mentioned, at the very least, it's a distraction, and at worst, it's just a sort of a legal issue that Benson is going to have to deal with.
Well, at worst, it carries a potential penalty of up to a year in jail and a significant fine. Now, again, we have no idea what's going to happen with this, whether charges will even stick. But the bottom line that you wonder is, even with all of his trials and tribulations in his short career with the Chicago Bears, Cedric Benson has never been convicted of a crime. He has not yet been subject to suspension or penalty under the NFL's personal conduct policy. But this one certainly would fit that area if, in fact, there is more to this story.
Right. And again, as we all know, the personal conduct policy has been strengthened in Roger Goodell's tenure in office. And a guilty plea or a guilty finding would put Benson sort of in a situation to perhaps face discipline under that policy. But I think it's also important to note that, and as you mentioned, Hub, Benson, was arrested twice within the span of about a month in the 2008 offseason, which again led the Bears kind of to release Cedric Benson. He was not charged in either instance. Charges were dropped in both instances. So again, I think from the standpoint of the league, obviously in the personal conduct policy, typically the NFL is going to let the legal system play out and kind of go from there. And obviously we shall see kind of what happens with this case with Cedric Benson, both in the legal system and both, if anything comes from that, what happens with regards to the league.
Mike, huge loss for the Pittsburgh Steelers this past week as starting offensive right tackle Willie Colon is down, we believe, for the season with a torn Achilles tendon. Of course, Colon, the only Steeler player with Ben Roethlisberger during some of his offseason problems down in Milledgeville, but that not the story here. A key at right tackle, particularly in the running game for this team. They are without him for the year, and it's a position at which they are not particularly deep.
No, but they do have some options in-house. They have some guys that have played the position in the pros. They signed Jonathan Scott, played for Buffalo last season, made six starts at right tackle in the offseason. So he's an option. Ramon Foster, second-year player, is another guy they could look at. Trey Essex has played tackle before. He's played right guard last season. They've also got Tony Hillis, who they drafted a couple years ago. But the most intriguing name that's been kind of linked to them at this point was that Flozell Adams, the former Cowboy, reportedly visited them earlier this week. And, you know, he's a guy that if he were to sign, you would think he'd be one of their starting tackles. And the question would be, where would Max Starks fit in? And Max Starks is another guy that has played right tackle. He was the starter on that side in Super Bowl 40. So they have some options here. But, again, kind of how they go into week one without Willie Colon remains to be seen.
All right, Mike, we need to get to a commercial break, but one other quick story coming out of the AFC South, actually. Tennessee Titans quarterback Chris Sims arrested Thursday of this past week on charges of operating a motor vehicle while impaired by marijuana. This, according to the New York Post. He is competing in Tennessee for a backup job with Kerry Collins and Rusty Smith. We don't know how this will impact that competition. We'll keep an eye on that story as the week goes on as well. Right now, we take a break, and then more on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News. The world's biggest NBA fan has their focus right now on an unusual year of free agency. Never has the free agent market seen a crop of talent in any sport like the NBA is offering this year, and so much focus on the key dominoes, if you will. It starts with LeBron James. It moves to Chris Bosh, and then Dwayne Wade, and then maybe Dirk Nowitzki in Dallas, certainly Amari Stoudemire in Phoenix, and who's going to go where? Well, did we get an early tip-off as to what might happen? We expect these guys to take their time. But Rudy Gay in Memphis was rumored to be moving on and then quickly decided he'd take $86 million to stay home. Joe Johnson told everybody who would listen in Atlanta he wanted to be a Chicago Bull all year long, but got a max contract to stay in Atlanta. And then there's Darko Milicic, who was counting the days, the hours, and the minutes till he could leave Minnesota, and he is staying in Minnesota. The first three dominoes to fall have all stayed home. Staying home can mean more money. These guys can talk about championships and who they want to play with all they want. At the end of the day, it is the almighty dollar that is speaking. LeBron can get an extra $30 million if he stays in Cleveland. Everybody says salary's not the key. We shall see. Our thanks to Jimmy Golan of the Associated Press in Boston, of course, Steve Kyler from HoopsWorld.com, and our thanks as always to Randy Meyer, our outstanding engineer and producer. Most of all, though, our thanks to all of you for listening. Join us again next week, same time, same station, on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.